Pretty happy. All right. Five, four. Oh, yeah, Joe, give us a countdown. Why have me do it?
3, 2, 1.
Cow. Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the show link, go direct to DLNTS.org. And I see channels at LinuxTech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 824 of the Linux Link Tech Show, first episode of September, for September 4th, 2019. Mm-hmm. On the show tonight, we have, you heard him, Gorkon.
Yo, yo.
You got Flying Rich, he might be out there somewhere, who knows. They got him. We have Pat.
Happy September.
And we have Joe.
Still ready.
Still ready. Still ready or still raining?
Ready.
Ready. What are you ready for?
Anything and everything.
Oh, hot damn. What was I going to say? No, I don't remember. I don't know what happened at the start of, like, took so long. For some reason, whenever I update Fedora, it seems to be the same with Ubuntu, too. When I restart the whole system, like, I got to be careful of how I have things plugged in here, because it recognizes the microphone as the main device if it's plugged in, and then when I plug in the headphones, so when I start a mumble, it ends up with the microphone being the main device, and this microphone has an audio out on it, and that's what turns
I have the same problem.
Yeah, and I don't know why. So I accept it. Usually I could just go in and PAVU control and switch it, but like, for some reason, if I do an upgrade and then restart and then start Mumble, and if Mumble's kind of changed, like, I don't know what happens, but, like, you guys were hearing that feedback. I don't hear that, and, like, I'm trying to say something, and nobody's hearing what I'm saying, but the microphone looks it's on. Everything looks like it's going in the right place, and it's just... So what I had to do was I unplugged everything, and I just logged out and logged back in, and that fixed the problem. So I just need to be careful of that. That's such a pain in the butt.
Yeah. I have one of the Samsung Meteor microphones, and every time I restart, I have to go in and manually change the audio output device.
Odd.
Yeah, I you know what else? You know what else that happens with? This is really weird. I don't know why I haven't invested the time to look at it either, but when I'm done with the show here and everything has worked just fine, regardless of whether I have issues or not, when I pull in the file in Audacity to do the little bit of editing that we do actually do, for some reason, Audacity just like hijacks all my settings, and I don't know what it switches things to. It gets really odd. So I have to open up a terminal and just type in also control restore, and it.
Okay, I was gonna say that's probably the problem is you're using ALSA versus using GStreamer.
Pulse Audio
is the main one. Pulse Audio, that's the other one. Yeah.
Well, that's the weird thing, right? I'll have to double check this, but if for some reason I have Mumble running and then I try and run Audacity, I always have that problem. Because usually, Joel, you and I are still talking after the show when I'm bringing up Audacity, and that's when I have that problem. Right. I should try it out and see if I still have that problem if Mumble is not running. Because when I have Mumble running and I'm trying to use Audacity, it will not let me switch to Pulse. For some reason, it will lock up Audacity. It's really weird.
Well, it's because ALSA is the lower layer. ALSA is the driver itself. You know, the part of the kernel. So if you're using Pulse, then multiple apps can use it. If one of your apps is fixed, like, for example, Mumble's set for ALSA, then no other program, not even Pulse, can use sound.
Well, all Mumble is using Pulse, which, like I said, is really weird. When Audacity comes up, it, for some reason, it will not allow me to do anything on Pulse. It will only accept ALSA. And I don't know why.
Weird.
It is. Every other application, no problem whatsoever. Multiple streams and stuff like that. And I can switch stuff around in Pulse for Audacity, but Audacity itself is like, it's got to be ALSA. It won't let me switch it to Pulse and allow it to work. So I got to investigate that more. But you know, I found a way to deal with it, not solve the problem, but remedy the situation. Right, Joe? That's how we do it on Mintcast, right? We don't solve the problem.
We break it more.
We gloss over the with a remedy.
It's like what Tronix Fixes T-shirt says: "If it ain't broke, it will be when I'm done with it."
There you go. There you go. Ooh. So get this, right? So, I've been having one hell of a time, like with like really stupid stuff. Like this is like really stupid, dumbass typo mistakes at work on my part. We have this application that is our CMS. And does anybody here use Okta for authentication? Have you heard of Okta?
Yep.
Yeah. So you're familiar with what I'm talking about a little bit here. So,
yep.
So Okta is this third-party authentication service where you hook your applications into it. Generally, you log in whatever way that you have your application authenticated. But generally, it involves like logging into something, which then you in Okta you have set up a second factor authentication. So it's either going to be like you're going to get a text message or you use Google Authenticator or something similar to that, and you get that code and you type it in and boom, you're authenticated to Okta. So we have a hook into Okta for our main application as well as a bunch of other applications, but for our CMS, and that requires setting up a chicklet inside our application or inside our like service portal where you can log in Okta in the one location, and then you just click on the icons, which are chicklets for those applications, because you're already authenticated to Okta. You don't have to keep re-authenting to all these other individual applications. It's all tied up with our Active Directory account. So with our CMS application, we have it set up with Okta. And so what it happened was originally set up, there was a single key that was used for all our environments, environment development, production, staging environments. And it was like, you know, this would be better if we had a separate key for each environment, one. And two, you know, if something happens and we need to change a key, we're not jeopardizing all environments. We have it separated out. Like, this is good practice, right? So I set about doing that. And looking into it and what we need to do. And so we had two keys, right? We had two keys set up. We had a certificate and a key in our vault. Well, actually, it was originally hard-coded. Terrible idea, right? Terrible hard-coding.
Hard-coding is always a bad idea.
Oh, my goodness. Like, so
yep.
That was another issue why we wanted to switch this. Because the certificate was hard-coded in the repository, along with and I forget where the key was. I truly forget where the key was. And when I went in there, I'm like, they're like, this. We really need to change this and move the certificate into the vault and get the certificate changed. And I started off doing that, right? So my assumption of how this worked, ultimately, go figure, was completely wrong, right? Going in there completely wrong. I thought I knew what I had to do after talking with some people, and everything. I thought I knew what I had to do, right? So I get in there and I'm like, we're going to roll some certificates here, going to get some keys, going to, you know, put them out there, get the certificate changed, get the keys, get it all going through Vault and stuff like that, and boom, we're gonna be great, right? So this is gonna work perfectly. So long story short, I thought that we needed to create all these certificates and the key and everything, but when I'm looking through this, I'm like, wait a minute, this absolutely doesn't make any sense. Why am I giving them the certificate to upload on their end and putting the key that I have created for that certificate in my application, and they're supposed to be sending me information and I'm supposed to be verifying that is from them? That's completely backwards, right? Why am I creating the certificate and the key? Well, actually, wait a second. Why am I creating the certificate and using it in here and the certificate? So it was this weird, like, really mind-bending thing to try and figure out. Like, it made absolutely no sense. But what it turned out to be was, with Okta authentication, when this was implemented and everything was hard-coded, right, I took it and moved it from being hard-coded and put it in our vault and switched it to be pulled from the vault. And I made the variables match like what they're supposed to be in the vault, not realizing that when I did that, there was a typo, and that prevented the certificate from being pulled from the vault correctly. So the certificate, not used at all, right? It wasn't pulling the certificate, but it didn't break authentication, didn't break Okta. And nobody knew about this for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. This was going on. When I finally figured this out, that, wait a second, it's not using the authentication, was because I kept changing the keys and the certificates and having them do that on the Okta side of things. And all the changes that we made did not make a difference. So it didn't matter whether I was using the right key with the right, you know, certificate, or the wrong key with the different certificate. Nothing was, it wasn't failing at all. Everything was successful. I'm like, this makes absolutely no sense. So what it boiled down to was, in the Okta authentication for the module that we are using in Node.js, the way that they import it was a module called Passport, a library called Passport, and it had Passport SAML authentication to Okta. What I discovered was that the certificates that we were using, right, there is one certificate that comes from Okta. It is a public certificate, and what that certificate is for is Okta, when it sends communication to our CMS system, it signs it with the key, and then you have the certificate on that end to verify the signature of that key, right? Originally, my understanding was we were supposed to generate all that, but no, that's an Okta generator certificate and given to us. So that's public to begin with. So that being in the repository didn't matter, and we can't change that, because the only person that can change that is Okta, and if we have Okta change it, it changes it for like everybody that is using Okta. Everybody that is using Okta in our company. So that's not something that we want to change. But the weird thing, though, about the way that this application operated was that was optional. Like, you didn't have to supply an Okta certificate to verify anything that had been signed from Okta coming in. If you don't supply a certificate, or if you pass in an empty value for the certificate, it treats it as if it doesn't exist and ignores that verification, and it's a success all the time. Doesn't throw an error, doesn't complain. It just successfully authenticates. And then there's another key that we have stored in our system. What was very confusing about this key, so we generate a certificate and a key from that certificate. We give that certificate to be uploaded into Okta so that any communication, a response or a request or whatever coming from our CMS system to Okta is signed by that key and then verified by Okta. So that's just another safety mechanism. So there's kind of like three in place. Okta itself, the certificate that Okta gives to you to verify the communication that it signs with their keys, and then the certificate that you give to them with the key that you sign and pass information when sending to Okta. So the weird thing is if the certificate is empty, which completely ignores validating the key and everything successful, if that's empty and you do have a private key set, doesn't matter. It ignores that too, and everything's successful, right? Now, if you set a certificate and it doesn't match the key that's coming in, obviously you're going to get a 500. That makes sense. If you set a certificate and it's correct, or don't set the certificate or have an empty value for the certificate, it's always successful. So then with private key that you are creating, if you don't have a certificate set or it's valid, then your private key will be used and it will validate. And if it's not correct, it will fail. So that really like threw me off completely. The biggest confusing part, I think, was the module itself called the variable for the private key, called it private cert. So it wanted the Okta certificate, which they generated, and it wanted the private key for the certificate that you had generated and given to Okta. But it called the private key the private cert. And that really made absolutely no sense. And I had a huge problem figuring that out right from the get-go. You know, that took a little while. But once we got past that, got everything sorted. And right in the middle of doing all this, we had other issues. So I was told I need to make my changes in a patch branch so that can be deployed to staging and tested properly and be ready for production. And I had done that. And in the time period that I had been originally working on this, created the patch branch, and then eventually had to go back and merge it into the master branch, which I had no reason I didn't need to create the patch branch. It was a misunderstanding there. They had done some significant changes, and I had a typo that ended up because the person who made some significant changes used the old code, which I had thought was already in the master branch. And when I went in and checked it out, it reverted my changes and replaced it with the old code values. And I couldn't figure out why the hell this stuff wasn't working again. Like, I had it working, and then when I was in the master branch and testing things out, it wasn't working. So really confusing. But that was some good times. What do you think, Joel? How you like Okta now?
I don't know. I don't have to mess with configuring it. That's not my job.
it is something. Like, documentation. I had to go back and rewrite that documentation like 3 times. Because every time I would do something and realize this is not right and rewrite the documentation and think I'd have it, there'd just be like another piece that was completely missed. We had to, you know, add some more to it and just like really. But now I'm like, we've made so many mistakes on this that we failed our way to success. And now we kind of have a really good idea of what's going on. Because even like when I'm talking, so like, there's another guy that I'm working like alongside of who's doing something similar to in Okta. Like, he's trying to get authentication to both our passive environment and our active environment to occur. And so there's like wacky things that we need to do. And Okta has two different kinds of like authentication that we're using. There's IDP and SP. So if you use the chiclet, that's IDP authentication. And what I was talking about before, we need to be, what that uses is this, the Okta certificate, which they have given us and we verify. That works for IDP authentication through the chiclet. Now, if you go straight to the URL login page in our application and ignore the chiclet, that is SP authentication. And when you do that, that uses both the certificate that Okta gives us along with validation of, you know, communication that we send with the private key that we generate, generated from the certificate that we sent to Okta. That's for SP authentication only. So when you log into Okta, what had happened in the past was it would validate your authentication and then redirect you to our active environment, well, to the active environment, right? And didn't have any awareness that it was a passive environment. So this guy had to set all that up in Okta so that you can actually have the passive environment redirected to where you want it to be inside the passive environment. So he had little bits and pieces of information, but not the complete picture. I had little bits and pieces of information, not the complete picture. And the person that we were kind of working with had a whole different set of things, but not the complete picture. So when I would go to somebody else for some information, their understanding was just as flawed as mine in some cases. So it was kind of a lot of fumbling around in the darkness, Joel. Fumbling around in the dark.
Yep. Join the club!
But now we got it down. It's so well documented. All the PRs are in. And I'm hoping to continue on with it tomorrow. Right alongside of backing up Spanner databases. That is a whole other sweet, sweet job. But I've talked long enough, gentlemen. Please, somebody else talk.
Well, you know, not much going on today. Nice, relaxing day watching not even old TV shows, just TV shows, catching up on Winona Earp. And I busted out the soldering iron while that was playing, and I got this M.2 adapter to USB 3 that was broken, as in, put the cord in there and it doesn't do anything. So took that out of the casing, put some downward pressure on it after sitting it upside down, and then resoldered the three holder pins so that it was more tightly held to the board, and it worked just fine. Right now I'm installing.
Wait, hold on 1 second. Hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
What did you solder this to?
This was a M.2 drive adapter to USB 3.0 that was broken. The USB port itself had come loose. So, like I said, I just put some downward pressure on it and soldered the three stability points on it and added a little bit more solder after it was pushed in a bit further, and it's worked just fine since.
Oh, nice. So that's I'm just looking up the M2 right now, see what it looks like.
A little tiny drive.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's about the size of a SIM.
What's the capacity on that drive?
Well, I've got three drives that could go in it. Two of them are 32 gig, and one of them is 128 gig. It's also the exact same drive that goes into my Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130.
Your old netbook, right?
Tablet convertible.
Well, you got IFA going on this week, so I expect lots of phone announcements, and a large amount of them will, if you are like myself, where you get your phone from your carrier, probably don't apply too much. Like, for example, Asus, with their ROG line brought out a second version of their gaming phone. Don't even know if any U.S. carriers have that. But then I guess later, what, I think this week or end of this week or next week, they have Apple announcement, which, you know, while most of us probably don't care about the Apple announcement, it does tend to drive what happens with Android phones as well. Either that or we know what they're going to steal from Android phones in the next iPhone. But in any event, I know Judy went to Berlin, which is where IFA is. I have not seen much from her. Of course, I've been busy with stuff, of course.
I'm interested in what the best low-cost Android phone that's out there. My phone's a couple years old. It's getting time to replace it.
Now, that Asus ROG Phone 2 is not a bad phone. It's price-wise, it's not as expensive as, say, Joe's Note 10 Plus, but it's still kind of on the pricey side. I think it's $1,100. But then again, it has.
That was the price of the Plus, $1,100.
Okay, well, maybe the same then. I think it's supposed to have a terabyte option, so you can get up to a terabyte of storage on a phone.
Oh. I am liking the Note 10 Plus. I mean, yes, it's much faster. Yes, it stays much cooler. The screen is epic. Still upset that there's no Android or Linux on Dex for it, but I am installing the and Linux on it right now just to see how it works.
And Android 10 came out yesterday, and I grabbed it on my 2XL. Fortunately for me and for the photography stuff I got happening this weekend, the drone DJI app works just fine. At least the Go4 app does. That's what I use for the Mavic. The only downside is that the app for, which is the plain DJI Go app, the first one, which is what the Osmo Mobile 2 uses, is crashing. So, which I kind of expect, but.
Let me ask your guys' opinion on something. What do you think about video games and DLC?
I hate it. I just want to buy the damn game.
In regards to what? Like,
well,
what do you
back
mean?
In the day, well, not even all that long ago, DLC was something that you got after you had finished a game and, you know, either fans or the company was like, okay, we're going to make some extra content. You guys love the game. Here's something more for you. Maybe you have to pay a bit for it or a nice chunk of change if it's a good piece of DLC. And I didn't mind that. You know, you play a game through, you still want to play more. The company offers you more, you pay for it. What has me upset right this minute is looking at the Borderlands 3 sales that are available right now. And, you know, you can get, like, the base version of the game for, I think, $49.99. And you can get one tier up, which gives you better weapons at, like, what, $79.99. And then you can get the next tier up beyond that, which gets you a membership for a month or something like that. And four DLCs that are going to be available from day one.
Wait, from day one?
Yes, four DLCs. If you pay the $100 for the game today, pre-order, then on day one, you'll have four DLCs.
Yeah, I'm just like, I think DLC in a lot of cases nowadays, especially, is an excuse to deliver an unfinished game.
Yeah, well, if it's already there and it's already available, then why is it not a part of the game? It annoys me.
I'm sorry, Joe. I was just looking at, trying to get like a full picture of what you were saying, like what they were offering, but what does DLC stand for?
Downloadable content.
No, come on. Okay, Joe, you're wrong. If you get the Super Deluxe Edition, right, which I guess is the same thing as Deluxe, it includes the Season Pass and
right.
the Deluxe bonus content. You're talking about DBC. You're complaining about DBC, not DLC,
it's got,
right?
It's got four pieces of DLC. Let me bring it up. Epic.
That's DBC. Games. That's bonus content, Joe.
Yeah. You know, extra gameplay. It's still DLC. I don't give a crap. That you have to download, yes. And pay for. Super Deluxe Edition.
Oh, see, all these things tell me they just, like, the deluxe edition includes the bonus digital content, not the DLC. It's the bonus digital content. Like, what's the freaking difference, right? No, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, here it is. Show more. Retro, four campaign DLC packs featuring new stories, missions, and challenges. It says it right there. Oh, and it gets you the Butt Stallion weapon skin, weapon trinket, and grenade mod, along with the season pass.
Yay!
So you're the four DLC, the season pass, which gives you access to four campaign DLC packs. That's available like right now.
Well, those have they opened yet? What? No, it's still pre-order. September 13th is day one.
No, I mean like those DLC packs are going to be available day one. They're not
That's the way I'm reading this. If you pay the $99.99, you get the Super Deluxe, which includes a season pass and deluxe bonus content,
and Fortnite season pass Psycho bundle.
Yeah, and the season pass includes four campaign DLC packs featuring new stories, missions, and challenges. So from day one, you're getting four DLCs. Four add-ons to a game that you haven't played or finished yet.
Yeah, dopey.
All right.
I mean, special versions of games, and I even get, you know, like back in the day when I remember Wing Commander had the multiple expansion packs, which actually gave you more game to play, not just a stupid skin or a weapon.
So Joe, I hear what you're like. I'm used to seeing whenever I see like a season pass, it usually says X amount of campaigns or whatever it is coming out to be released in the future. Right? When I got Dark Souls 3 and the season pass says we're committed to providing three more
future content.
Yeah, future content, yeah, three more things in the future. And you're right. I don't see that in any of the listings that I have looked through for Borderlands 3.
Figure if it wasn't available day one, then they would say that because people are looking at this are going to be expecting it to be there the first time they turn on the game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I don't know any other game that I have bought that gave you a season pass where all the, like, where they say, hey, we're committed to X number of things, was available on day one, though.
Well, you know, if they said it here, then I could understand, okay, I'm paying for the next four times that DLC becomes available. And, you know, that's hedging that there will be four times that DLC becomes available. But I would be more accepting of that. This says right there, oh, it'll be available day one, essentially. It's not saying you have to wait for the DLC.
No, I see what you're saying. It doesn't say that. All right, here's the Borderlands 3 Season Pass. Whoa! Ah. You love this show. So, Joe, okay, here's the official statement. This solidifies it. Alright? So, try and contain your rage. Continue your Borderlands 3 adventure with the Season Pass featuring exclusive cosmetic items and four-story campaign add-ons with new missions and challenges. This content is included with purchase of Borderlands 3 Super Deluxe Edition and Borderlands 3 Collector's Edition. So
yeah.
I'm assuming that content sounds like it's already there on the
exactly
on the disc.
They're calling it new gameplay, even though it's exactly the same age as all the rest of the gameplay.
All season pass DLC will be available by September 2020. So it almost sounds like you just got something that's just going to unlock it and maybe add some. Yeah,
it bothers me.
I agree with you. I agree 100%. It feels cheap. You're right. It feels like they're trying to like pull a couple
they're
extra
not,
bucks.
They just want to make sure that they have the game out when they said they would have it out, but yet the game's truly not finished.
Well, now let me ask you this, Joe. Let's say the game came out and they offered you a season pass where they promised you four bits of content at least in that season pass, but they were going to be
not available yet.
Yeah, not available.
Delivered over time.
Right. Like, that wouldn't upset you, right?
Right. Or even if they changed the terminology, I think I would be less upset. I mean, if they were selling it as an expanded edition instead of four DLCs that you can get. Like I said, maybe it's just the terminology that is tweaking my nipples here.
See, I don't know. I like part of me is I agree 100% with you. Like, I even if they did it as like an expanded game, I'm like, I feel like they're really trying to make a cash grab, because in the past, it seems like this would have been included in the game. Now, I also recognize the fact that if they just took this 4 DLC that they had finished already and were like, we're just going to release it, you know, each one of these in over the next 2 months, you know, over the next 8 months. So every 2 months, you're going to have a new one. And they already had it done. Like, I would accept that. Right. But I would accept that. But yet, at the same time, it's no different. They're just releasing it later on because why not? You know, to not make it look whatever. But I still feel cheated.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That's like, you know, releasing your game and on day one, you have a patch to fix it. That's about as large as the game itself on the disc. What's the freaking point?
Yep. Well, people releasing broken games, that's one thing. And I still have high hopes for Borderlands 3 just because of how long it took them to release Borderlands 3 after Borderlands 2. It's like they were really trying to make a good solid game.
You're not talking about, you're not including pre-sequel in there, right?
I am not including pre-sequel in there. Pre-sequel is a good game. My wife greatly enjoys pre-sequel. I've played some of it. But even then, there was still some distance between 2 and pre-sequel. And it was all supposed to be leading up to Borderlands 3 coming out eventually one day. And what they had that other one. What was that other one?
Tales from the Borderland?
Tales from the Borderlands, yeah. And that was...
That's a big no.
That was basically not even a game.
But some people love it, though.
Well, it told more story. It told how
if you want to Scooter read a book, died.
Yeah.
Read a book.
Pretty much.
Don't play a book.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, it's all supposed to have been leading up to this, and they took a really long time with development and getting it out there. And I'm really, I still have high hopes for the game not sucking. But yeah, that pisses me off. The 4 DLCs day one, if you pay basically double the money.
How much of a fan are you of Borderlands?
Hmm?
How much of a fan are you of the first 2 Borderlands?
Well, I'm a fan of Borderlands 2. I haven't played Borderlands 1, although I have played pre-sequel.
Did you do a lot of the post games?
Yeah, Tiny Tina's. I've played Commander Lilith's. I have all of the Mercenary Day stuff. Basically, all of the DLC for it I've gotten over time.
What have you beaten that? What's the like the real true last big time
Commander boss? Lilith?
Is it Commander Lilith on Borderlands 2?
Yeah, that's the absolute last one. Came out like 2 months ago.
No. What's the creature?
Oh, what's the name of the big boss in Borderlands 2? The final guy? No. Not the...
Jack?
Yeah, before... The guy that Jack wakes up. What's his name? Oh, the warrior. Sorry, I was asking my wife. But yeah, I've beaten the warrior multiple times.
Terramorphous? The Invincible?
Terramorphous is a raid boss.
Cromorax. Cromorax, Borderlands 1?
Son of Cromorax. I've beaten Terramorphous. I don't remember if I've beaten Cromorax or not. Some of the bosses are like really, really difficult on single play, and I don't really play online.
Oh yeah, no, I found that. I was thinking of Borderlands 1's DLC, everything you had. If you beat everything, there's that optional mission, you will die for Cromorax, the Invincible.
There are actually several of those style of missions in Borderlands 2.
Yes.
There's the Seraphs and the a couple of different raid bosses. Pyro Pete, something the Invincible, Heterax the Invincible.
Pete the Invincible, Pyro Pete, yeah, just like you had said there. Master G the Invincible, that one of them. Hyperius the Invincible.
Yeah.
Now, I found, like, I loved Borderlands, but I found as I got closer to the end of it, I just got a little sick of the repetition.
Yeah. Well, I do enjoy playing through, and I do, like, you know, I've maxed out one of my characters and got it up to, like, OP3 just because I could, and I'm working on maxing out my Necromancer now. And it is already on Ultimate Vault Hunter mode, and I don't know. I probably won't go past OP 2 or 3 on that one either. And then I'll switch to another character and do it again. And I still haven't played a Gunzerker, and I'm not going to play the Psycho. But I've got Axton still to finish up as well.
Wait, who's the little girl?
The Necromancer, Maya.
That's right. Yes.
Oh no, Gage. Her name's Gage.
But she's what? Is she the she's not the Necromancer.
She's the Necromancer.
Yeah, she's the Necromancer. Yeah, right. It's been so long since I played it, but I loved it.
Yeah. It's been a couple hours since I last played.
Couple hours. It's been a couple
years since I played it. I was saying, here I am. I'm just thinking about getting a Nintendo Switch.
Right. Well, wait. Are you
just for myself?
Are you playing it on Linux, Joe?
I have it working on Linux, but even the Commander Lilith, one of the listeners from the Mintcast, helped me get everything worked out so that it would work right on Linux, and it does, but the for some reason the graphics look washed out, and I'm sure it's the wine wrapper there or whatever. So I already had it set up in Windows, so I go back to Windows to run that game because it does look a lot better, even with all the settings maxed.
Okay.
So, well, I'm a filthy dual booter.
There you go. Well, I'll say this, Joel. If you do get a Nintendo Switch, apparently it was leaked that Borderlands 2 is coming to the Nintendo Switch. So, maybe you could jump on the Borderlands bandwagon with Borderlands 2 on the Switch. And maybe one day you'll get Borderlands 3 too.
It's one of those things where I'm debating whether I go to the Switch or the Switch Lite. I'll probably do the Switch just because every once in a while I would like to hook it up to my TV. But, you know, more and more now, I don't think my son even gives a crap about the Switch. So now me spending $300 on the Switch just for myself probably wouldn't be so bad, because I probably won't have to spend another $300 to get him one too. I could probably get him a Switch Lite if he really decides he wants to play it.
I think my mate Vince has a video of taking a Switch and turning it into a Switch Lite.
My mate Vince. Okay.
It's actually called My Mate Vince.
Not Tronix Fix, okay. Yeah. Tronix Fix, did you see his fixing? He got, what, I think 16 or 18 Switches working out of the 20 he bought?
No, I've seen he put up a couple of videos on that, but I haven't gone through those yet.
Yeah.
And that's, I saw one of the titles was like he couldn't believe how well he did. And
he's 18, selling them too.
Yeah, well, yeah. 18 is quite a good catch on a job lot of 20.
Yeah, and that has me halfway thinking of going and grabbing one of his, but I'll probably buy a brand new one.
Well, I'm sure if you messaged him after you got it, if it quit working, he'd fix it again.
I'm sure you would, but nah, I'm just thinking a brand new one would probably be better. But that, now on the other side of that coin, too, though, I can't imagine me ever hooking it to a TV, so the Switch Lite might be more up my alley, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you what, Joel. Having a Switch, I love the ability of hooking it up to a TV.
Yeah. Now,
let me ask a question on that. Does it have set-top box like abilities?
What do you mean?
Could you run Netflix on it?
I think you can, but
I do believe.
Wait, but you'd have to have your Joy-Cons disconnected and hooked up wirelessly to use them as a remote control.
Okay.
No, I trying to remember which one it is. So Hulu, I think, is on the Nintendo Switch, but Netflix is not currently on there.
Can you go to like web pages? Can you use it as a web browser? Go to YouTube.
See, I don't think it's like a full tablet like it really should be, but
I think you can, but I've never tried it. You know what? Hold on. I will go get it and I will tell you definitively. Hold on.
See, if that works, then the dock itself is not super huge. You can just throw that in a suitcase when you travel. Nope, I just did a Google search and it came across an article and it says the streaming Netflix is painfully absent from the platform, although both Hulu and YouTube can be found in the eShop.
What about Crackle?
Let's see, it says one of the foremost pieces of news Netflix might be coming to the Switch is we lost support for the majority of the streaming services on January 31st, 2019. Netflix, Hulu, Crunchyroll, and YouTube no longer work on Nintendo's old platforms. It doesn't say anything about it.
You know what, Joe? Can you hear me, Joe?
Yeah, I hear you.
So it doesn't have a browser included with it. And I don't know if there's one to download. I don't recall there being. I'm looking in the store right now. No, I don't see anything for a browser.
There's the official word from Nintendo there.
What's the official word?
No.
Yeah, so... yeah, Hulu's available. Whoop-de-doo, right? And I'll just verify. I'm pretty sure Netflix isn't.
Honestly, and I don't care if it's not on there. It'd be nice, but I don't care because I usually have some 18 million other devices that can run it anyway. You know.
Cool. Okay.
I'm mistaken. YouTube is on here. You can download YouTube.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube app.
YouTube and Hulu.
YouTube and Hulu. Netflix is not on here. I've never tried using YouTube.
What about Crackle?
Oh, wait. I thought there was an anime service. Hold on. Let me double check.
Either Crackle or Crunchyroll.
Why does it keep defaulting to Lily's account? I don't understand that. Let me see here.
Probably because she uses it more than you.
I think she might have been the last one. There is a... there's like a comic book reader on here too.
Probably my most frustrating thing with the Switch is why didn't they just make it a freaking tablet to begin with? You know, and that also had the ability to play games. You know, but oh well. Because it's not Android, it's their own thing as well. That's like over the weekend. I bought another shelf from IKEA and put it up in my room, and put some of the stuff I had on my little desk over here to the left of me on it. So basically, the only thing I have on the desk itself right now, in a normal situation, is like a couple laptops and my three different Nokia tablets and an 800. And two N8 tens, And I dug the NA10 out for a little bit today, and I started dinking around with it and then started Googling around to see what else could I run on that old decrepit thing. And the answer is pretty much nothing other than a really old version of Android, like 1.6. But it's still got MAMO on it. They're basically my early 2000s museum pieces. Remember how great we thought those things were back in the day there, Dan?
which one?
The Nokia internet tablets running MAMO. Well, you never had one.
No, I didn't.
I know Link had the N800. I had the 770. Which that was still one of my favorite designs of the three, and I did have for a very short time I had a N900, and because Verizon never supported it, and I never turned it on and used it as a phone. And now our phones probably have more power than our a lot
the
of
desktops
that we
had when the NA10 came out.
Yeah, true. True. The NA10 still what? I think it's still 16-bit too, if I remember right. It's ARM6.
No, I never had one. I think... I had a couple of Windows devices that were somewhat similar or easily hackable into something else, like the Dell Axum X51V.
I remember that.
I loved my X51V. It was my first basically ebook reader, audiobook listener, Skype phone.
I'll take that back. It was the 32-bit. But still, I mean, it's still massively underpowered now.
Yeah, and then I also, and there's still development on this one, the HTC HD2. It also started out as a Windows device, but they just kept porting different freaking operating systems to the thing.
The one I never got that I always wanted was, there was an iPad that had a full VGA screen on it. I'm trying to remember. I think it was the HX47 something. I can't remember. But I always wanted one of those. They had, and instead of just most of the pocket PCs of the day had just a D-pad, lousy D-pad, but it had D-pad nonetheless. But this one actually was not just a D-pad; it was also a trackpad. I'm trying to remember the number on that one. That's when HP got goofy with the iPac numbers.
I think I still got that X51V in a drawer somewhere.
Looking at the HX4700. Yeah, it's with the Intel PXA2670 processor running at a whopping 624 megahertz. Windows Mobile 2003, 192 megabytes of memory, 80 megabytes of IPAC file store. Yeah, VGA display, USB 2, infrared, Bluetooth, blah, 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 blah. And back then, when I had the pocket PCs, I always wanted there was a Samsung Ericsson phone, the little tiny thing that had Bluetooth on it. I don't know if you remember the model number, but it had but with the Bluetooth, you can connect to a GPRS and get slow internet onto your pocket PC.
Yeah.
I also had the Toshiba E740, which was the very first pocket PC that ever had Wi-Fi on it. That I think that one and the 45, the I think it's 4555 or no, the 555 or 5555, which was the last of the iPacks that had the little backpacks that you can put them in. Like you had a backpack that would give it PC card slots. Then there was another backpack that would give you an SD card, an extra SD card slot, I think. There was also one that had the GPS fill into it and a few other little things, but. I remember back when I had pocket PCs, when I thought I was hot stuff, when I got a 128 megabit SD card, and now I have a 128 gig SD card.
No, I think I had, because the X51V would take compact flash, so I was able to get like a 16 gig compact flash on there or something.
I had a compact flash modem, dude. And when I was training to get the job I have, or had at the college before I left, I would take that with me. And back then, we were using MSN Instant Messenger. I think it was MSN Instant Messenger. But I would chat at the wife and at other family members using a little, I think I had a keyboard, little USB keyboard, because the E740 at the time, you could buy an adapter that would plug into its proprietary port that would allow you to connect regular USB devices to it.
Yeah. Well, the only problem with setting up the Dell Axum again is that it wouldn't connect to Wi-Fi anymore if I were to turn it on now. I think it only does WPA.
Oh, okay.
It's an encryption issue. Either it's stuck on WEP or it's WPA. And yeah, I do believe it is B, but it just can't do modern encryption.
Yep, so that's a bad thing with a lot of these old devices.
So most routers won't even accept it as a device unless you jump through like 50 hoops.
Yep. I need to see if there's a version of OpenStreetMap that'll run on the N810. The standard map program won't work anymore. You have to buy a license key, and I'm sure you can't buy that anymore either. But there are the repos are still there. So I mean, the MAMO used apt. So there are still repos out there, and there are occasionally still updates. Maybe once every other year, there might be an update for something, but 9 times out of 10, no, there aren't any.
Well, it's a cool piece of history, and
it is, and it's evidence that Nokia actually knew what they were doing, but really kind of screwed it up. I mean, they could have really overtook Android.
Yeah, maybe not. I'm sure that their sales reflected differently.
True. Well, I think part of the problem was is they weren't going to phones fast enough. It took them forever to bring out the N900.
Right. Well,
honestly,
if any major company today thought they could possibly make more money selling a Linux phone, then wouldn't they?
You would hope. But it was our best chance for an actual, true, more desktop-like mobile device.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's more in common with a desktop Linux on the N810 than there is with a desktop Linux and Android. I mean, because you might be able to run X applications on an Android device, but not like you can on the NA10. I mean, the NA10 is essentially running X. So.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's nowadays, in order for a phone to make it, and this is why Microsoft failed with the Windows Mobile, is the App Store and the application support. You know, and people have, you know, there's so many people that think, oh, the iPhone's so much more secure than Android. Not really. I mean,
It is a bit more of a walled garden there.
Yeah, well, yeah. You can't, and that's the other thing, too. I think the iPhone's harder to develop for.
Absolutely, it's harder to develop for.
Yep. Well, the Android, you don't necessarily have to have an, I mean, if you wanted to develop an in-house app on an Android device, you don't even have to put it on the App Store if you don't want to. You can just email out the APK and you're good.
Right. You know. Well, probably the closest things we have these days are Windows tablets that can be made into Linux tablets, or the GPD Pocket 2.
And even though it's ridiculously expensive for all it is, I still want one.
Yeah, I still want one too. I'm just not willing to crap the $600 for it.
Yeah, if I spend $600 on a device like that, I'm buying a laptop.
Agreed.
It practically is a laptop. It's just a small laptop.
Correct, but I can get a much more powerful full-size laptop than that thing. So,
I don't even think that it's underpowered for what it costs. I mean, it's supposed to be faster than the Surfaces, but I don't want to pay Surface prices either.
I don't know
either.
About that. You know, it depends on which Surface you're talking about. Maybe faster than the Surface Go, but I doubt it. Faster than the Surface 6. Well, I think there's also a Surface event coming up, too.
Yeah, and the Surface 5 and the Surface 6 have really good i5 and i7 processors.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's difficult to beat. But I think the GPD Pocket was running, the M3, which is the mobile version of the i3? Which is still really good.
Well, it's the same. I think it's almost the same processor that the Surface Go runs.
Right.
So, with Surface devices, I'll say it. I'm a fan of them. I got one, right now, would I ever run Linux on it? Maybe when it gets really old, I will.
Why not dual boot? Or just try booting off a USB and see what happens.
Oh, I have. Yeah, there's certain things that don't work on it yet. That makes, that basically are all the reasons why you buy a Surface specifically. I think the pen kind of works, but not really. You know, it works.
Well, I know that there's some specialized applications made specifically for the touch pen on the Surface. And that's Touch Egg.
I'll have to look up some of those.
Yeah. But people have gotten around most of that stuff. I've heard that the Microsoft Surface is one of the best tablets out there for running Linux. Simply because of how many people have one and how many people are actively developing to get that
better.
Yeah,
I'll agree with that. Yeah. I'll agree with that. But what they really need to do with any of the Surface line right now, none of the Surface line has Thunderbolt. It seriously needs it. I mean,
The Go had C.
The Go does have C, but it's not a Thunderbolt compatible C port.
Okay.
It's just a C port. So,
it's not 4-channel or whatever.
No, and the pros don't have it at all. So it just has the standard Surface connector and one USB port, which I'm still kind of annoyed. That's still annoyed. It's definitely annoying. especially since I have a couple, not very many. Most of my portable hard drives are all down to just one USB port. But I do have like at least one old one that has two connectors. But in fact, I actually thought it was dead, but earlier this week, I plugged it into my Surface, and the disk is fine, and it's running without any errors. There's nothing on it because I'd erased it for some reason, because it's just kind of a backup disk I have hanging around, just haven't gotten rid of it.
My 7130 has a Core i5, the 4300Y, and let me see, Core i5-4300Y. On Passmark, that is still getting 2,505.
Right.
So for a tablet, it is blazing fast. I mean, right. I probably still have in production a laptop or two that's slower than that.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. You know, they need that. They also need to keep upgrading the NVIDIA cards in it. The Surface Book 2 actually has a decent NVIDIA card in it. I would love it if they had a... I would rather them also put essentially two NVIDIA cards in it, one in when you're only in tablet mode, but not as powerful, and then maybe like a 1050 or something like that in the base, which I think that's what they have in the base right now. When you undock it, it switches over to the Intel card, which, you know, it's sufficient for tablet mode for most of the things, but now my Surface Pro doesn't have discrete graphics. It's just got Intel, and that I think I'd love it if they'd have this discrete graphics in Surface Pro as well, just because it would help certain things, especially like a Creative Cloud and stuff like that. Because I've been doing a lot of I'm shooting this wedding this weekend for my friend and his daughter, and I was working on lunchtime today. I fired it up After Effects on it. It was just annoyingly slow until I switched the disk cache around from one to the external drive and back to the internal drive, and I finally got it where it was actually working at an acceptable speed.
And I just got this email. Sorry to interrupt you there. We can go back to that in just a second. Uplay starts today. So Ubisoft's subscription store starts now. And they currently have more than 100 plus PC games for free. No, that's Ubisoft. There's a deal with Epic Games and Borderlands 3 for exclusivity for the first 6 months.
Which is dumb. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people said that's dumb.
Yeah. Well, I see Rainbow Six Siege on here, Tom Clancy's The Division, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Watch Dogs Legion.
So, I've fired up Steam lately. I need to.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be updating for the next half hour then.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually took on my Windows machine, I took Steam out of startup because it's just annoying. It starts to suck the bandwidth immediately when it opens. Even if it does that, mostly, if I leave it up and running, after a while it calms down and it's not eating up so much of the Wi-Fi bandwidth. But when it first fires up, boy, does it. I mean, I can just put system monitor up. I can watch the network go crazy for about 15 minutes, and then after that, it's okay.
So, from what I can see from this, you're paying $14.99 per month, and then you're paying for the individual game that you want to play.
Oh, that's dumb. Wait, can I just pay for the game?
What are you paying for $14.95 for?
For the subscription to be able to play on, I guess, streaming from them. What is Uplay for $14.99 per month? 100 plus PC games, access a growing catalog that includes new releases, latest games, classic titles, and beloved PC franchises. Players will have access to Ubisoft new releases, Access premium game editions, including their additional content such as DLCs, expansions, and automatic updates. Get new release early access and beta programs when applicable. Players can cancel anytime during the subscribed month to prevent being charged for the following month. But then I'm looking at the special offers, but maybe it's because I'm looking at the special offers page because it's also listing prices for all the games.
So wait, so you got a $14.95 for the Ubisoft service per month, and you still got to spend pay like
I might be wrong $90
for the Super Deluxe Edition of Borderlands 3.
Well, no, Borderlands 3 isn't going to be available on Ubisoft, at least for the first 6 months.
Oh, well, so wait, let me get this right, though. Any game that's under the Ubisoft umbrella for $14.95 a month, you get to play? On the service?
Subscribe to Uplay, visit the Uplay Plus game list, and select the game you want to play by clicking Add to Library. Your game is activated in your games library on Uplay PC. Download it and enjoy.
So they're offering you a number of games for $14.95 a month. You could play any one of those games.
Yeah, I guess so.
And is there a limit to how many you can play simultaneously?
I have no idea. I got this email while talking to you guys.
Yeah, it sounds like a Netflix, a video game type thing where if you don't pay for the service anymore, you don't get the access then, I guess.
Right, but it also looks like they have a Uplay PC where you can download the game to your PC and have it. I mean, once it's on your computer, what are they going to do?
Yeah, but they might have some kind of DRM in there. What am I? Come on, Joe. What are they going to do once it's on your system? Not let you play it.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of games nowadays that, well, you must have an active internet connection in order to play the fucking game, even though it's all downloaded on your machine, you know.
But especially on the PC side of things, though, when they decide to no longer support or want to provide access to that game, right, they usually give you a CD crack or something. Or a code that you put into the game that bypasses that requirement. Since you purchased it and they don't give a damn about it anymore, you put in that code and it unlocks it and you don't have to phone home. That's so long as the company's nice enough to do that. I think, what is it? Is it Good Old Games does that or Steam does that? Like if they're not going to have that game anymore
Good Old Games.
On Steam, you get the code to unlock it and then you do whatever you want with it after that.
I know they offer something. Well, I know GOG will sell you game codes, and they're Steam game codes. So, and I know Steam, I think, allows you to add things to your library that you have physical copies of. Although I haven't tried to do that.
Yeah.
Remember the old DRM technology where you had to have the manual and the game
or
would
the
tell
wheels
you,
or
yeah, and the game would tell you to look on this page and this column or whatever it was. Oh, like I had some that had a like a yellow, very like neon bright yellow on white lit grid of numbers, and you had to it made it so it couldn't photocopy easy, but it would tell you like you'd have to look up the number in the grid and put it in the game. This was back in the mid-80s, I think, though some of those were. Remember those days, Joe?
Mid-80s. Oof. 1986, I do believe I was playing Nintendo and I didn't own a computer.
Wow. Do you remember having to put in the codes in Nintendo? Like the ones that
the
16
codes?
Characters long?
Yeah.
Oh, those sucked when you got them wrong.
Yep.
I just love it. Probably my biggest thing is when even before the days of Steam and these online stores, like for example, I've got MechWarrior 2, and I had the expansion pack too, but those were for Windows 95, not for DOS. I can't get the thing to run on any modern Windows at all. And as far as I know, nobody has those two games on modernized. You know, like good old games will sometimes take some of the old 95 games, modernize them so they'll play on Windows 10 or even Linux. And, you know, Steam would kind of do the same thing with some of that stuff. But nobody's done that with those two classic games. The MechWarrior 2 game was just a classic mech game. And I had at one time, I have a copy of MechWarrior 3 in my closet over here, also for Windows 95/98. And it won't run on anything modern either. You know, and you start to have some of that same problem with some of the mobile phones too. Like I said, most apps run on Android 10, but like the app I need for my Osmo Mobile 2 gimbal doesn't work. And then I'm waiting for an update before I can use that again. And nobody seems to be caring about writing their programs so that they'll work across multiple versions of OSs anymore. It just doesn't seem to ever happen. Unless it's Linux, and then it'll run forever.
Dun, dun, dun.
I haven't looked at good old games in a while.
Good old games.
Yeah, I typed in MechWarrior and nada. On my 286, I played the original MechWarrior game, which was it's just called MechWarrior, I think. And that was when in the BattleTech universe, when they had, but it was before the clans, is when that hit in that universe. So. Is only InnerSphere on that one, and you were essentially a mercenary in that one. And then when MechWarrior 2 came out, the clans had already invaded the InnerSphere, and you got to pick a clan that you were a member of. And now Steam seems to have quite a bit of different MechWarrior games, newer ones. Like they have a Solaris game. Solaris in the universe, in the MechWarrior universe, was a kind of like a battle royale kind of thing with mechs in an arena, which I had originally bought that scenario for the actual board game back in the day. Speaking of that too, I think, doesn't Hasbro own Wizards of the Coast now? That would be the company that did Magic: The Gathering.
Yeah, I think Wizards of the Coast bought TSR too.
Right.
So yes, Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast in 1999.
I know, a long time ago.
Wow.
And Hasbro bought the rights to records by Hatebreed, High on Fire, Black Label Society, and more. That was just last week. They bought Death Row Records is what it was.
So they were... They operate as a subsidiary of Hasbro since 1999.
Yes. Yeah,
they bought? I can't remember when they bought TSR. I don't remember that. That was back in the 90s, too. Wow, that was a long time ago.
I'm trying to remember whatever happened to West End Games.
Wait, they were a board company, weren't they? Board game company.
Yeah, West End Games. Yeah, West End Games made the Star Wars role playing game. They also made Star Warriors, which was a Starfighter battle game. So basically, you'd have a hex board, you'd have X-Wings and TIE Fighters, and they even went as far as Star Destroyers. And then they had a scenario where you would fly the Death Star run in Star Warriors. But instead of having a special map or anything, you basically just took the three a row of three hexes down the middle of the board, and that was the trench. So if you were in those three hexes, you were in the trench. Now, you could still fly out of the trench, that was a neat one. And the bad part with that is I never could find anybody that would actually play it with me. So either Star Wars... Warriors, which was the Starfighter game, akin to BattleTech on the FaZe BattleTech / MechWarrior deal, and the role-playing game, I never could get anybody to play either. But there was just a lot of content in the role-playing game, which is not canon, and it was interesting stuff. Never could get anybody to play. It's probably easier to get people to play that game now than it was back when I had it. Actually, I still have it. It's probably in the closet over here.
See, I'm trying to remember what I recall West End Games from. It would have to be the Star Wars role-playing game. I know that, but I thought there were other ones.
Yeah, they did a Ghostbusters one, one called Torg, Shatter Zone, World of Indiana Jones, Neck of Scope, Tank Girl, they had a Men in Black board game, and they had a Tales from the Crypt board game, a role-playing game.
So Paranoia, I remember, was a big one.
Right.
Back in 19... I remember that being advertised quite frequently in Dragon Magazine. And there was a DC Universe role-playing game, but that's not... There was another... Champions. Champions was the DC role-playing game. So, who did Champions?
West End. Okay, yeah, I was going to say it wasn't West End.
No, that's not... that's not right. Okay, yeah, Champions was first published in 1981. It's got to be Hero Games. I don't remember being called Hero... I guess it was.
See, according to the Book of Knowledge, West End went bankrupt in 98, emerged in 99, and fully acquired in 2001 by a company called Humanoids, Inc. And then they were acquired in 2003 by Purgatory Publishing. Remnants were then acquired in 2016 by Nocturnal Media. So they were originally founded in 74. I have to look and see. FaZe was the one that did the MechWarrior games, but they also did some of the Star Trek stuff, too. Yeah, FaZe did a Star Trek role-playing game, the Star Trek Starship Tactical Combat Simulator, Doctor Who, MechWarrior, Shadowrun, Legionnaire, and Earth Dawn. And then board games, BattleTech, Renegade Legion, and Crimson Skies. They had some miniature games too, VOR, The Maelstrom, and Demon World. Now that's weird. The current phase must be a brand new company, because if you look on their Wikipedia page, the phase of corporation was founded in 1980, then went defunct in 2001, but they now exist as of 2012, and I think they're mostly with the online games now, I think. No, they still have some. They still have some board games too. Interesting. A friend of mine's really into playing the X-Wing games.
Wait, was I muted there?
Yeah.
Oh, Rogue Squadron?
No, there's a board game. Now, computer game. They have the X-Wing Special Edition on Good Old Games right now. The X-Wing series that came out in the 90s. For DOS and Windows. But now it works on Ubuntu. I bet you can get them for dirt cheap now, too. Yep, $9.99 for X-Wing Special Edition. X-Wing and all Tour of Duty expansions, Imperial Pursuit and B-Wing in all three versions. The DOS and DOS CD and 1998 Windows versions. DRM free, no activation or online connection required to play. That's a good thing, Guild Old Games. I got like Wing Commander 3 that way too. So it runs on a modern machine. Oh well, it's getting late.
Yeah, we gotta wrap it up.
We're rambling.
Yep. What the heck?
And Joe switched to his cell phone, it looks like it.
Yep.
So yeah, actually, you can get the entire series on Good Old Games of X-Wing games, which would include X-Wing Special Edition, TIE Fighter Special Edition, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, and X-Wing Alliance. For $39.96. But you can only play X-Wing Special Edition or TIE Fighter Special Edition on Linux. The other two are Windows only.
When are we going to see like PS1 games actually move to PC?
Never.
Never. That's they got the PS Vita for that, man.
Whoa, gotta play us out. We got, what do you say, Joe? You mean in a non-emulated format, or you mean like?
Yeah, I mean non-emulated. I mean I can spin up an emulator and, right, and play Armored Core Masters of Arena, but I want to see it actually done by PlayStation, just releasing it so that you can have it on a PC or reselling it on a PC through a service. I don't care.
Yeah, so long as that PC is like the PS4 or PS5, you got it.
Ha ha.
I don't know. I don't think we'll ever see that. Do you think we'll see that?
One day when they don't give a crap about it anymore.
Yeah, maybe. Now,
as long as they keep pumping out PlayStations, you know, that's not going to happen.
Oh, man. All right. All right, I got to play this out. It's getting late. We got bad weather coming tomorrow. Woo, woo, woo. Here we go.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get the head of it. Probably going to start whipping up a lot of bad weather here, and then, I don't know, we'll see. Hopefully, we won't have to evacuate. But we shall see.
I don't think you will. We'll see.
We shall see. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Joel. Rich?
Well, Pat. Pat's already gone. So it's Rich.
Yeah. Have fun, and we'll see you in a week. As long as my house is still here. Have a fun one. Here it is, your promos.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
I just realized I forgot to take my metformin, so I took care of that.
You took your what?
Metformin.
The hell is that?
Diabetes medicine.
Oh.
Although I'm not official, I don't think I officially have it. No.
I will not take care of that. Say goodnight, hey, Joel. So I can stop.
Good night.
So you can hear me now and everything's good with that?
Yep, and it doesn't sound like you're in the shower.
Oh, the only bad thing about Florida is all the standing water, and the mosquitoes are like all over you the second you walk outside.
All the time or right now?
I was gonna say, is that normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I swear I got bit more in the last hour than I have in the last 5 years.
Dang.
Wow.
But,
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Waiting for you to get your ass together.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Pizza, pizza.
All right.
No, I had Jersey Mike's, man.
You had Jersey Mike's?
Yes, sir.
What did you get?
I think I got the cheesesteak.
Wait, you think? Like, did you not eat it yet?
Oh, yeah, I ate it, yeah.
Well, did you get the cheesesteak or not?
Well, but it had, like, some chipotle sauce on it, too, so it was like a chipotle cheesesteak.
Oh, so was there, did it have the mushrooms and onions and everything?
Yeah.
Was it, it wasn't chicken cheesesteak, right?
No, sir.
Okay. How many times have you, like, had a lot of Jersey Mike's?
Not a lot. I mean, I get them like every once in a while.
Because I love their Italian sub. The number 13, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
With the spicy relish on it. Oh, I love it.
It's been a while. I think it was maybe last fall, maybe. When Luke had one of his JTBA tournaments, which I don't have to do that this year. He's too old. But there's this store down there called Jungle Gems. If you ever get to Columbus or to Ohio, you should check them out. It's basically foodie heaven. But inside the store, there's a Jersey Mike's, and that's where we ate that day. Yeah, Jungle Gems is phenomenal. It's definitely a place you want to check out if you're a foodie.
What is Jungle Gems?
Well, it's a long time ago. It started out as like this fruit stand, but now it's like got pretty much everything. And they have, what's kind of neat is they kind of divided the store up inside into little areas. So like there's a German food area. There's a like one row of nothing but hot sauce, like everything from Dave's Insanity all the way up to some really obscure stuff. And they even have like a classes that you can take for cooking classes. The beer selection there is second to none. There's probably no better selection in Ohio. And wine and cheese and meat and it's all good stuff, dude.
Wow, it sounds nice. Let's kick this show on the road right here. Let's get it going, huh? Get it going. It's
yes.
Episode 824. All day long. You ready, Joe?
Always ready.
See, Flying Rich. Mr. Rich. Is he there? They got him. The mosquitoes got him. How you doing, Pat?
Blame it on Dorian.
How's it going, man?
Good to see you. All right. So we'll get the show going if Rich returns.